Going In Raw is now a CastBox original. CastBox is the fastest growing, highest rated podcast app on both iOS and Android, where you can find all your favorite podcasts. You can still listen to Going In Raw wherever you get your podcasts, but we hope you'll give CastBox a shot. We think it's the best. Hey, Brendo, Steve here.
And Larson, and welcome to Going In Raw Countout, the only pro wrestling top 10 countdown type show right here at Steven Larson's YouTube channel, youtube.com/. Damn it, my phone fell in my pocket again. Steven Larson. Well, that's not a reason to restart.
Power through.
And we're also available wherever fine podcasts are found, including CastBox. We've got a great partnership with CastBox. Check out the app, please.
Yeah, you can go to Going In Raw. You can subscribe to us.
Yeah.
That helps us.
You can leave a comment.
And in response, we might leave a response back that says,
Thanks, friendo.
We're also at Pro Wrestling Tees, where you can get this shirt. ProWrestlingTees.com/Going In Raw.
We're also on Patreon. Patreon.com/Steven Larson.
Mm-hmm. Now, we know from personal experience, Larson, that repackaging sometimes is necessary to survive the landscape.
We used to be a gaming channel.
Yeah.
That didn't work.
Nope.
We did pro wrestling.
That works. Exactly. And so in the world of wrestling, there's been many times when wrestlers who were saddled with either a gimmick or a lack of storyline that, you know, all wasn't playing into their helping out their careers. They weren't getting ahead. And so or they just needed to freshen up. So a repackage happens.
Yes.
And a repackage can come in a variety of ways. It could be taking one character and just turning that actor, that wrestler who's playing that character, into a completely different character. Or it could just be a character who gets some tweaks, some major tweaks, and they're repackaged as, you know, a different type of character, variation on that character.
For example, a heel or a face turn or a new approach that character might take to their performance. A
couple names we left off this list. Chris Jericho, who was expert at
reinventing himself.
Reinventing himself. Kind of like, this is an odd analogy, but kind of like Madonna. Back in her heyday, for those 2 decades, she was really, really strong. She was really good at reinventing herself album to album. Chris Jericho, kind of the same. Whenever he came back, he would tweak something.
He would do something a bit different.
Probably the
largest wholesale change he might have ever done was his Anton Chigurh.
Yeah, 2008, 2009.
Yeah, inspired a character. When he had that great feud against Shawn Michaels.
Right, yeah.
Where he really changed a lot of what he did.
Yeah.
Changed, like, the cadence and speed of his speech.
Yeah.
Dressed in nice suits, all that kind of stuff.
Right. So he didn't really make the list, but that's because that was more sort of his own wanting to stay fresh as opposed to, hey, this isn't working, we got to change something. Also, WCW did this a lot. A lot.
Well, I don't think they initially changed character because something wasn't working. It was largely because of the whims of whoever was booking at the time.
Yeah, no, yeah, exactly. And so, you know, and they've been, like, throughout history, been all sorts of weird, goofy ones. But we chose, like, the 10 sort of biggest repackages we could think of.
Most successful, you could say.
Yeah, most successful, too. Like, this is, like, Glacier turning into Coach Buzz Stern. He's not going to be on the list. Chavo Guerrero turning into Kerwin White. Definitely not on this list. So let's...
Oh, you know, something we could have put on, I see, is 8x10 over there. Raven.
Yeah, I thought about Raven, and he would tweak his character. Well, what you mean from like Scotty Polo?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. That was a pretty big repackage. So let's get started here.
Yes.
Number 10.
10.
Matt Hardy. Now, obviously, these days we see a much different Matt Hardy. This was from, I think, his first appearance. This picture right here is from his first appearance in TNA as Broken Matt Hardy. Of course, these days he's Broken Matt Hardy. He had a career renaissance.
Woken Matt Hardy now.
Woken, yeah. Sorry. Ooh, Woken. He had a career renaissance during his time in TNA.
Yes.
When he was just sort of Matt Hardy.
And then he was Broken.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And then he came, returned as the Broken Matt Hardy character.
Mm-hmm.
Started his quest of deletion.
Mm-hmm.
Delete his obsolete brother.
Yeah.
Brother Nero.
Yeah.
Which, of course, led to the final deletion.
Mm-hmm.
Probably the greatest thing ever produced under the TNA Impact banner.
Or in wrestling altogether.
That could be true as well.
Yeah, absolutely.
So that change happened in early 2016.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Almost exactly 2 years ago.
Mm-hmm.
The broken storyline began.
Yeah.
And then, of course, culminated in TNA in total nonstop deletion, the special episode, which took place entirely on the Hardy compound.
Right.
Which featured tag team Apocalypto.
Correct.
At this point, Broken Matt, Brother Nero, unified force. Although Brother Nero would moonlight as Itchweed
mm-hmm.
from time to time.
Yeah, true, true.
He had a match against... Oh, who did he have a match against at Total Nonstop Deletion as Itchweed? I don't remember.
I forget.
I don't remember.
Yeah, I don't remember either.
But anyways.
It was a crazy episode.
They had a great run in TNA, and then their contract was up. They wrestled briefly in Ring of Honor, and then returned to WWE, and there was much anticipation about whether they return as a nostalgia act or bring in the aspects of the Broken Universe with them.
Yeah, trademark law dictated they came back as a nostalgic act, though. Yeah. So sadly, yes. Sadly.
All that legal stuff got worked out. Now Matt Hardy owns the copyright and trademarks for the Broken Universe stuff. And so now we finally got to see Woken Matt mm-hmm. Hardy. I'm sure they changed that so WWE could own the Woken Universe as opposed to the Broken one. But mm-hmm. a lot of the mannerisms and whatnot of the Broken Universe are in that universe as well. We get the deletions.
Mm-hmm.
We get the obsoletions.
Mm-hmm.
Obsoletions. Obsolete.
And we get matches at the
Hardy Compound.
The Hardy Compound, yeah. This was... The great thing about this was that out of the two brothers, like, so leading up to that, there was always rumors that Vince wanted Jeff Hardy back.
Yeah.
Well,
Jeff was typically the one that was pushed the hardest as a single star.
Yeah, absolutely. And so it was very heartening. I think, and you can kind of tell with Jeff Hardy as well, I think Jeff Hardy is very, very happy for his brother, that his brother experienced his career renaissance, because Jeff was the one that was sort of always more wanted. He was more over. This was awesome for Matt Hardy. It was really cool to see.
Definitely was.
Number nine.
Nine.
I mean, Isaac Yankem DDS,
I mean,
or
Diesel.
Fake Diesel.
Fake Diesel.
Look at all those different Glenn
this is
Jacobs.
Just during Kane's tenure in WWE, he first arrived in 95.
So he made his first television appearances from Wikipedia.
As Lawler's dentist.
Yeah.
Isaac Yankem DDS.
Correct.
Obviously, that didn't last very long.
No.
Because he's a dentist.
Yeah.
Who's also a wrestler.
If anybody asked us what the ceiling in that would be, we would just say dentist.
He's a dentist. So... He returned following Kevin Nash's departure of WCW as
September of 1996.
Diesel. They tried to lie to us all, saying that Diesel and Razor Ramon were the same as they were before Hall and Nash left.
Well,
so you have Rick Bognar as Razor Ramon and Glenn Jacobs, a.k.a. Kane, as Diesel.
There are many problems here. But one thing
they
is...
They lied to us. That's
they
the
didn't,
largest
but
problem.
But here's the thing. They... Wasn't it openly acknowledged that... So the story was Jim Ross was bringing these guys in.
Yeah.
But it was... wasn't it like on TV openly? Like, that's not them.
Still, they're trying to make us think. Like, they're successful, popular characters, and they think, well, we'll just cast new people in those roles of Diesel and Razor Ramon. They'll still be popular. But they're losing the essence of what made those characters popular in the first
place. Hall and
Nash. Which is, yes, the charisma... of Scott Hall and Kevin Nash. And without that charisma, those characters are nothing.
But wasn't the... I wouldn't mind going back and watching some of this. Just because Jim Ross was portraying, was being... His gimmick at the time was disgruntled Jim Ross.
Mm-hmm.
And he was bringing these guys on. Now, it might have been floating the idea, hey, can we get these fans to accept this? Because we could do this down the line with other people if they're just into the character. But I think it was openly acknowledged that this was, even on camera, in character, it was stupid. I don't think they were actually trying to convince anybody this was the real deal.
Well, I mean, they kept the characters around, so to a certain extent, they were trying to fool people.
they're definitely fooling themselves.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yes, they were lying to themselves, if nobody else.
Yeah.
So, obviously, fake Diesel didn't stick around. Kane returned
October 5th.
After a lot of hype. Yeah, at
1997.
The Bad Blood in Your House pay-per-view, where he ripped the door off Hell in a Cell, destroyed Undertaker, helped HBK defeat Taker at the very first Hell in a Cell match. And then Kane, you know, That
was Kane. Yeah.
A very successful career that's still happening now, more than 20 years later. I think perhaps my favorite Kane gimmick change was when he joined the Authority, became Corporate Kane.
Yeah,
so
I like
the khakis,
yeah,
the button-up business casual or suit. Mm-hmm. And maybe that was actually the true motivation for his political career,
mm-hmm,
was getting to show up at work every day in a suit.
Yeah, it could be.
Without having to wear the wrestling gear and the mask.
I wonder if he asked anybody, if he said, hey, do, because his character was the director of operations,
yes,
Corporate Kane. I wonder if he ever asked, do director of operations ever get to you wear polo shirts? Because these days, Glenn Jacobs, as now the Republican candidate, I believe, for Knox County, Tennessee, he gets to wear a lot of polo shirts.
Well, I think if you're out campaigning door to door, either wearing a polo shirt or a button up with a top button unbuttoned and sleeves rolled up.
Yeah, 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 yeah. If you're a true man of the people, you're wearing a polo. On top of that, oh, do you disagree with that?
No, I don't disagree. I think, as I said, there's one of two options.
Yeah, well, I think the other option is more, look at me, I'm richer than you. I want to show you that I'm better.
I don't think it's a matter of money or not. I think it's a matter of, okay, am I going to dress down slightly? Mm-hmm. If so, polo. Make myself seem more relatable.
That's what you want to do as a politician.
If I want to seem still relatable, button unbuttoned, sleeves rolled up, but come off as a tad bit more formal,
yeah,
then they'll go with the button up.
Yeah. If you're going door to door, man, you need to sport a polo. On the other hand, people might mistake you for an AC,
salesman. Or working for a pest control company. Here's another issue, too, is that if you wear a polo, you can't wear an undershirt. That looks weird.
which, by the way, we've noticed in a lot of those Glenn Jacobs pictures, it is obviously humid as F.
Exactly.
In Knox County.
And it looks kind of weird if you're wearing a polo shirt with the undershirt underneath. Unless you got a V-neck where you can't see it.
Yeah, you need a V-neck.
But if you got a button-up with the top button unbuttoned, it's totally cool to be wearing an undershirt in there.
Yeah. But, you know, yeah.
Anyways, Kane, number 9.
Kane's great.
Next, number 8.
I just want to continue this conversation about what to do if you're a politician going door-to-door. Number 8.
8.
Bray Wyatt! Hey, man, look at me there.
Yeah, he was.
I just look like a regular dude.
So in 2010,
he's
from a wrestling family, son of IRS Mike Rotunda.
Yeah. Who went through his own fair share of repackages.
Well, he was pretty much a different name for the
IRS
thing.
And what was it?
Michael K. Wall Street. Is that what it was in WCW?
Yeah, IRS and Wall Street.
Bray Wyatt joined NXT in 2010. Under the name Husky Harris, and he competed in NXT for a while until 2012. He was part of the Nexus, got brought up to the main roster, mm-hmm, as Husky Harris,
mm-hmm,
and then 2012, back to NXT. I guess it was Florida Championship Wrestling then, and then he was rebranded Bray Wyatt. I believe he said himself that the character was inspired by Waylon Mercy,
yeah,
one of Dan Spivey's old gimmicks.
Mm-hmm. Which in itself was inspired by the De Niro character
from Cape Fear.
Cape Fear. Anyways, FCW rebranded as NXT. He stuck around there. He made his debut on NXT TV on July 11th, 2012.
It was VK Wall Street, not Michael K. Wall Street.
And he defeated Aiden English. I watched a lot of the NXT from then. Aiden English was essentially the jobber to the stars at that point.
Oh, yeah.
Jobber to future stars.
There you go.
Because whenever somebody would debut, it would be against Aiden English.
Yeah.
And then that Aiden English would always lose.
Yeah. When Bray Wyatt got brought up to the main roster, it felt like a breath of fresh air because it was a new character that we hadn't really seen before. He wasn't quite supernatural, but, you know, there was hints of that. He was this charismatic leader type that was different and fresh, and it seemed like he was on the precipice of really great things. His first major feud was against John Cena.
Yeah.
And they had a match at WrestleMania 30 that if Bray Wyatt had some way won the war, he didn't necessarily have to win the match. But if either one or two things, if he had beat Cena because Cena couldn't bring himself to use the chair to defeat Wyatt, that would have been huge for him. If he had managed to get Cena to use the chair to beat Bray Wyatt, again, he wouldn't have won the battle, but in the larger sense, he would have won the war. That would have been a huge step forward for him. Neither of those things happened. He lost clean to boring face Cena.
Mm-hmm.
And yeah, he'd pick up a win over Cena later on down the line, but that seemed to be, in a nutshell, even back then, really what they thought of the Bray Wyatt character, a character with a ton of potential and a ton of potential to make the company boatloads of money. that they never fully invest in. We saw most recently with the Randy Orton storyline. You know, there was a wealth of options in front of them to make an interesting storyline, and out of that, an interesting Bray Wyatt. They chose none of those options. Instead, chose boring face champion Randy Orton.
Yeah, it is. I said this, I think, in the episode that's also going up today. Top 10 WWE guys now who need a repackage. That they're really hesitant to disrupt the status quo, and it's really, I think, hurting the product.
Yeah.
But in any event, the actual repackage from Husky Harris to Bray Wyatt is one of the most successful repackagings I can think of pretty much ever.
There was like a month maybe where the crowd was chanting Husky Harris.
Oh, dude, I will tell you this.
And then that stopped.
Maybe it was more than this. I only actually remember one instance on TV of hearing the chants. It might have been more. Maybe I just wasn't paying attention after that. But one time I noticed it, and I never noticed it again. It was so well done, and people wanted to buy into this character so much. Mm-hmm. And, you know, hey, he's tag team champion right now. You and I both understand he could have sold a lot more for the company, and that's what we think anyways.
Yeah.
And on top of that, we're just big fans of the potential that we saw there. And yes, when he's been great, he's been really great.
Yes.
I'll never forget that time when Triple H was champion.
Oh, gosh, he just came in the ring and just touched the belt, and the crowd went bonkers.
And he was best when he had the family behind him.
Yeah.
He really was.
Yeah.
So, anyways, yeah. So, Husky Harris to Bray Wyatt. Number seven.
Seven.
Edge.
I think you know me.
Do you remember those great video?
Oh, they were fantastic.
We watched like a couple of them before while we were compiling these things. That's where I got the still from. So, Edge, when he was about to debut in WWE, they did these really cool vignettes of basically just Edge just milling about.
Yes, B-roll with some really interesting voiceover going on.
Yeah, it was really, really well done. It was like, I mean, it was all just, yeah, like you said, B-roll. It was just footage of him milling about town, watching trains go by, walking around the streets at night.
But it was also shot kind of very guerrilla style. Yeah. It looked like it was VHS or VHS-C.
Oh, man, it was great.
Really,
yeah,
grainy, you know, video.
Mm-hmm. But all tinted.
A lot of texture to it. Yeah,
yeah, yeah. And so anyway, he was sort of this mysterious guy. That was his thing. He was very mysterious.
Yeah. And he had like a Matrix kind of leather jacket.
Yeah.
Kind of
leather jacket.
And he had the wraparound sunglasses.
Yeah. The problem with that is that he couldn't really do much with just mysterious guy.
Mm-mm.
Because eventually you have to know who he is.
Mm-hmm.
He ended up feuding with the Brood with Gangrel and Christian rather. And then they brought him in. And I do remember, there was never really a reason. They never explained why he ended up joining the Brood.
Yeah.
They didn't do that. But he joined the Brood. Then he became Vampire Guy because that's what the Brood were. They were vampires.
Yeah. And they became part of the ministry.
Right. Yeah, yeah, they did. Yeah, that's right. Yeah, they did.
Yeah. Eventually, yeah. Edge and Christian split, formed their own very successful tag team, and they were just kind of goofy guys.
Yeah, they were just dudes. They were just regular dudes. Because I think Gangrel turned on them. And then, like, joined up with the Hardys. Like, didn't the Hardys become the new Brood?
Yeah.
Yeah, something like that. And so that left them without their vampire powers.
Yeah.
And so after, I think it was, like, after TLC or something, that's when they started doing the comedic stuff.
Yes.
Because they were, like, legit. You guys know. You probably listen to the Edge and Christian podcast and see the show.
Yeah, they're really, really funny guys.
They're hilarious.
Yeah.
And have, like, tons of chemistry because they've known each other forever. Of course, that's when they were doing the five-second pose thing. And then after they ended up breaking up, Edge went on a singles run, and eventually,
it was about 2004, that he started becoming the rated R superstar,
sex man,
yeah,
super sex fiend,
yes,
violence
so
guy.
So that was around the time that he and Lita were getting together. He was pursuing world titles, and he was being more heelish. And of course, this all culminated when he cashed in the very first Money in the Bank contract on John Cena.
And then had sex.
And the next night on Raw, live sex show.
Live sex show in Lita.
So he went from vampire.
Mm-hmm.
Sorry, mysterious guy.
Mysterious Matrix guy.
To vampire.
Vampire.
To goofy non-vampire.
Dude, man, yeah.
Yeah, no longer vampire.
No longer vampire, yeah.
Was that for a while.
Yeah.
And then Sex crazed.
Heel,
ambitious guy.
Violence man.
Yeah.
Yeah, totally. Who, like, takes women from his friends because, like, around that's I think that's, like, they had to turn him heel because it got out that, like, you know, Lita and him were shacking up
yeah
behind Matt Hardy V2's back.
Yeah.
That's back when Matt Hardy
was internet.
So Matt, yeah, that's
what he was more like real player. Because his thing came up and it was like a real player window.
That's what we forgot to mention is Matt Hardy, before he was broken Matt Hardy and he was regular Matt Hardy, he was like Hardy Boy, and then he was Vampire, and then normal
Team
guy.
Extreme.
Yeah, Team Extreme.
That was with Michael Hayes. Or was that Michael Hayes at the very beginning?
Michael Hayes was very brief, but it was all Team Extreme. And then
when he went
solo.
Later, yeah, he was internet.
He was internet.
Yeah.
That's right. He was internet. Oh, man. All right. Let's see here. Oh, let's
number,
go next.
Number six.
Number six.
Number six.
Triple H. Look at H face.
We're not even going to really talk about.
Look at that. Look at the, look at my face.
We're not really going to talk about Terror Ryzen, his WCW days. This is strictly WWE, WWF. He debuted kind of in roughly the same gimmick he had in his latter days in WCW.
Right.
It was Hunter Hearst Helmsley, the Connecticut Blue Blood.
Yeah.
You know, he was an aristocrat, essentially.
He was a rich dick.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. And
like,
then,
who in 1996 does this stuff?
I know.
Nobody does that.
Nobody does that.
So was that like the original time traveler gimmick?
Well, I think it's because no one did it. And it seemed really snooty.
Yeah.
That they probably thought, well, people are going to hate this.
I mean, is that like, I know rich kids these days just Instagram their Ferraris or their, you know, Maseratis or their watches or whatever. Now I'm just thinking of Baron Corbin. But like, you know, rich young kids, you know, trust fund babies or whatever. They take a picture of them on a yacht or whatever. Again, I'm thinking of Baron Corbin. Back then, did rich kids curtsy?
I don't think so.
I don't think so either. So I think Triple H's original gimmick was time traveler.
Could be.
So eventually,
instead of being a rich dick, he started talking about dicks.
Exactly. So he transitioned after the Madison Square Garden curtain call incident with the Click, where they all, you know, divulged to the world that, hey, we're not,
all friends.
We're all buddies.
Sorry, kayfabe, but we're all friends here.
He was punished for like 18, was it a year? 18
about
months?
A year. I mean, he jobbed to the Ultimate Warrior at the following Mania in about 2 minutes.
So he was...
he was going to win King of the Ring 96.
Right. And then he was, and then he lost to the Warrior in record time. But eventually he found his way out of the doghouse and joined up with DX, where they would talk about, you know, dinguses and saying bad words and China.
And he wasn't doing any of the snooty rich guy stuff anymore.
He wasn't doing any of that
stuff.
He was
cross chopping.
He was cross chopping.
That's a good Drew McIntyre cross chop there.
Anyways, Triple H, he was DX. But then at WrestleMania 15, him and China left DX. And joined, and then eventually formed the. Well, no, they.
It's very.
She didn't.
It was the corporation, and eventually became the corporate ministry.
Right, and it was like the McMahon Helmsley faction thing.
Yeah, and through all that, he became the Game,
the Cerebral Assassin,
the Cerebral Assassin, and he had his Reign of Terror, his Golden Shuffle,
the Golden. I find it funny. Exactly.
And then now, perhaps his greatest gimmick change to executive.
to global localization
yes.
is the way of the future. I'm going to bury the entire world. So, yeah. I mean, that's like one of the biggest transformations ever. This is Triple H. Anyway, let's look at that. Look at that friggin' face, man. That's great. Look at all those great faces. Best face in the business.
Oh, my gosh.
All right, number five.
Five.
Sting. He went from telephone operator.
to angst filled rafter dweller.
I'm sorry if you guys are listening to this, we have like the picture.
Yeah, sorry for those of you who are listening just the audio.
We got the pictures up here.
So Sting really made a name for himself
in
the NWA early days of WCW as a surfer dude. Sting with the face paint and the blonde crew cut. No, before that, no, he was part of the Blade Runner with Ultimate Warrior.
right.
But, you know, he really grew to prominence as Surfer Sting.
By the time 1989, he came in 87. By the time 89 rolled around,
he was the icon.
He was the franchise. Yeah, Prime Sting.
But they needed a foil for the NWO.
Yeah.
And who better than the franchise, the icon Sting? So he started growing his hair out, wasn't bleaching it anymore, started wearing darker tights, still did the face paint, and he disappeared for a while.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And then the NWO tried to fool us all with NWO Sting.
You know, you're getting this backwards, though. I have it all written down here. Here's the thing. I thought that as well, but it wasn't actually that. So there was an NWO Sting before Sting really went all in on the Crow stuff.
Oh, interesting.
They were doing like a fake, an NWO, because do you remember in World Tour, NWO Sting wasn't, he wasn't the always the Crow. Like there was the, Sting started growing his hair long and not bleaching it. And he would keep the, and so he was getting a little bit like thematically darker shades of, you know, his colorway was darker.
Yes.
And so let's see here.
And why do they think he was fooling anybody?
Okay.
Or how do they think they were fooling anybody if they had NWO Sting hanging out with them? But then right over there is real Sting.
So here, this is what I got from Wikipedia. Well, it's WCW. On the October 21st, 1996 edition of Nitro, Sting returned for the first time since the Night After Fall Brawl in a match where the imposter Sting was wrestling Mr. JL.
Okay, so when was Fall Brawl? So he did disappear for a while.
Yeah, Sting emerged wearing a trench coat and white face paint with black marks around his eyes. He went in the ring and attacked NWO Sting, who was still imitating Sting's old mannerisms at this point. With his new finisher. So the NWO, he disappeared. NWO wanted us to believe that Sting was with them.
That's what I just said.
Right, but he wasn't doing the Crow stuff yet.
I didn't say he was. Oh, I said disappeared, and when he came back, he was doing the Crow
stuff. I thought you were talking about NWO Sting.
No.
Okay, yeah. You didn't know that NWO Sting was doing his old mannerisms. They made it look like it was old Sting in
their
group.
The way you were... I thought you were saying it was like Sting was still around, whereas NWO Sting was hanging out with the NWO. Like, why did they?
No,
think
I'm
they're
sorry. No,
anybody?
I'm sorry. No, I wasn't.
Like a new Sting disappeared
for
a while.
Yeah, he took off.
So, anyways, Sting adopted the full Crow gimmick, hung out in the rafters, didn't speak a word for basically a year.
Yeah, which was pretty ballsy.
Yeah, it was pretty neat. So, like every episode of Nitro would end with the NWO laying somebody out, Sting showing up in the rafters, rappelling or down. And beat people up with a baseball bat, or they would just cut to him in the rafters,
and then cut to
Robin Hood.
Yeah,
And that lasted for the better part of a year.
Mm-hmm.
Blow off, of course, Sting versus Hogan at Starrcade '97, and despite Hogan's best efforts to pick up the W, Sting did win, kind of, and get that title. But even though they vacated it afterwards because Hogan made the finish all
screwy,
it
was terrible, just absolutely terrible. Yeah, NWO Sting, who could forget him?
And then, there was the Joker Sting in TNA.
Yeah, that's non-canon. Terrible. Just awful. Anyways, let's continue on. Number four. Because, I mean, you know, the NWO Sting, if we can get a little heated talking about all the NWO stuff. Because it was all over the map.
Oh, it was.
Yeah, man. Number four.
Four.
The Undertaker.
Yeah, he went from dead man.
I really like motorcycles.
To motorcycle enthusiast.
Oh, man.
So
look at me and my motorcycle.
He was hurt. Still using the dead man gimmick. Mm-hmm. And then he returned on May 20th with a new gimmick.
Yeah.
Getting rid of the dead man stuff, replacing it with choppers.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
New metal.
Oh, I love corn.
And a lot of beanies.
Yeah, I got my beanies on.
During this run as the American Badass, he was named after a Kid Rock song, apparently.
Yeah.
He formed the Brothers of Destruction with Kane.
Mm-hmm.
So he was... Yeah, it's weird. Why didn't they do that when he was dead man? It made more sense because that was the whole thing.
Right.
So Kane's brother is just a motorcycle enthusiast at this point.
Yeah, exactly, yeah.
Then he turned heel in late 2001, kept the basics of the gimmick, redubbed himself Big Evil.
Yeah. So even he had, within his repackaging, he had a sub-repackaging.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Big Evil.
Yeah. And then, he went back to being dead man in 2004. And since then, he's been kind of at various points an amalgam of all his various... iterations.
Yeah, like
he's
when he was
certain aspects of some of them.
When he was feuding with Brock, he was doing the MMA Big Evil stuff.
Well, he still wears the MMA gloves.
And he wears the gloves, yeah. But lately, it's just been nostalgia. Mm-hmm.
You're kind of hoping he'd come back as American Badass.
I know.
For his match
I'm still hoping for that.
No, if they weren't going to do it then, they're not going to do it now.
Oh, you don't think so?
No.
Man. Hey.
What's your favorite version of Undertaker?
Whenever he came out to Rollin' by Limp Bizkit, that was dope.
Oh, so that's
come on, man, that was rad.
So
get
like
out of
American
here,
badass.
Yeah, it's the best taker, man. There you go, you're in it.
No,
you have a really squeaky chair.
I know. Thanks to you.
Rollin', 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 rollin'. How long have we been in office now?
About a month or so.
Yeah, I know. It's been a while.
Just notice the square was square. This chair was squeaky.
He returned to the dead man gimmick and do this one for.
Yeah, I said that already. He's been dead man ever since. It's been 14 years.
Jeez, man.
Went back to being the dead man. But that's a pretty massive change to see the Undertaker.
Oh, yeah.
Supernatural force imbued with the powers of the darkness.
Powers of darkness.
Just being a biker guy.
Vince, I'm tired of all this makeup and crap. All these the lightning is too loud.
Yeah.
I mean, the thunder is too loud.
Yeah. I want to hear the thunderous roar of my chopper.
Vince, have you heard this new band called Limp Bizkit? They're great. Get it? How they don't spell biscuit with a S-C-U-I-T like biscuits and gravy. They spell it like with a Z. I want them to be in my new theme music. They have this real great track called Rollin'. I come out on my bike, and sometimes I'll even wear sweatpants.
He's tired of wearing all the opulent gear for the Undertaker, and he's wanting to be comfy.
Hey, from like piggybacking off our episode, other episode today, he's going to be the leader of the Kirkland Brothers.
There you go.
Mark Kirkland. I really love Costco. All right, let's move on. Number three. Where is it? Here we are. The Rock! Look at that baby face right there on the left-hand side with all the weird costume shenanigans going on. And then look at prime 1998 champion Rock with his, it looks like it's laminated, his jacket, shirt. Is it a shirt or a jacket?
It's a shirt,
man. I can't tell.
It's a shirt.
Anyways, yeah, so when they first debuted The Rock, he was the blue chipper.
Yeah, Rocky Maivia.
Right, he's third generation superstar.
Debuted in 1996, and he was instantly pushed down the throats of everybody.
You guys are going to love him. You guys need to love him. Love him now.
Yeah, that was pretty much the gist of commentary during all of his matches as Rocky.
Wow, Maivia. Isn't he great? Ain't he great?
Yeah. Within like 3 months of his debut, he won the Intercontinental title.
Right.
And right about that time, I believe, the fans in attendance at all the shows started chanting what?
Die, Rocky, die, and yeah, Rocky sucks.
They weren't into him.
No, not at all.
So following an injury, he returned, turned heel, joined the Nation of Domination, and started referring to himself as The Rock.
Yeah, kind of crazy that they took a guy who the crowd was crapping all over, and then they changed him.
He was off TV for a while. He came back.
Yeah.
And they did something different with him.
Yeah, they did something different with
guess
him.
Guess what, Steve?
It worked.
It worked.
Now
he's the most highly paid movie star in the whole world.
Sometimes those things work.
It works.
Listen, if I keep crapping in my toilet and it's not working when I try to flush it,
you should fix it. You should change something.
You know what I definitely shouldn't do?
Keep crapping in that toilet.
You know what's going to happen if you do that?
You have too much crap in there. It's going to back up. When you crap, your crap's be touching gold crap.
Eventually, that crap's going to crest and touch my butthole.
Yes.
And you know what? Nobody likes crap buttholes.
No. So sometimes you have to change things so you don't have crap touching your own butt.
Exactly. Oh, I got a notification from next door. Somebody found a dog. Hopefully, it's not mine.
Oh. So anyways, of course, The Rock, one of the most successful characters in the entire Attitude Era.
Mm-hmm.
And then this new Rock gimmick started getting himself so over, he was on the precipice of being forced to turn face.
Yeah.
And they did a ballsy thing. Did they turn him face? No, they turned him heel again.
Oh.
At Survivor Series 98.
Man. Made him even
deadly
bigger.
Deadly Game Tournament. Secured his first WWE Championship, all setting up for a match against Stone Cold at WrestleMania 15. Greatest rivalry of the Attitude Era.
Yep. One
of the greatest rivalries of all time.
All time.
And The Rock, yeah, you know, went on to become one of the top stars of the Attitude Era. Top movie star in the world right now.
Mm-hmm.
So sometimes, yeah, you just have to, when things aren't working, you change them.
What's a bigger rivalry, Rock Austin or Bruno versus Backyard Dweller?
I mean, Larry Zbyszko.
Yeah. We'll think about that one.
I don't know if I would say Rock Austin because they had three WrestleMania matches.
Probably, man. Holy moly. Wow. Anyways, yeah, The Rock. It goes to show what happens. I mean, Chad rams somebody down somebody's throat. And then it doesn't work.
Doesn't work.
Crap, touch the butthole. Number two. Hulk Hogan to Hollywood Hogan. Again, if you're listening to this on the audio, I'm sorry. We've got this great picture of Hogan holding his own head.
Yes.
Anyways, yeah.
They
so
a lot of weird stuff in WCW.
So Hogan, despite in 1993 him referring to himself as Ichiban, he by 1995-96, after he is firmly entrenched in WCW, he was no longer Ichiban.
Yeah.
He was not best. He was not number one, Larson.
No.
No, he was in fact getting booed.
Hulkamania had more or less run its course.
It had fizzled out.
Yes, just completely. As it more or less did in WWF. People stopped really giving a crap. He went to WCW, worked for a little bit. In the end, people stopped giving a crap.
Yeah.
And so at Bash of the Beach 96, a massive change happened in the wrestling industry that shocked the entire world. So the match
you
was
You sound
set
like
up.
Eric Bischoff from the WCW tape.
Oh, wow.
Massive shift happened in WCW.
So the match was Sting, Luger, Macho Man taking on the Outsiders and a mystery partner.
Yeah.
The main event.
Ooh.
And so the match was going down. Hogan comes out in the middle of the match, dressed in the red and yellow, comes to the ring, starts acting like he was shouting something at the Outsiders. Instead, he gets in the ring, drops the leg on Macho Man.
Yep.
DQ finish. No one wins the match. In very WCW fashion.
Yeah.
Hogan joins up with the Outsiders and forms the new world order.
Yeah.
The NWO was born. Hogan drops a promo talking crap to all the fans.
Immediately starts stealing the spotlight from his fellow NWO members.
His far more charismatic partners in the NWO. And it was just a massive change because it was the first time in more than a decade that Hogan had been a heel.
Yeah.
And he'd been the top guy or the most well-known guy in the entire wrestling business for 84.
Yeah.
So 12 years, a dozen years, as a good guy, and he turns heel. It was a massive, massive change.
Huge.
And of course, he would go on to lead the NWO and ultimately more or less ruin it.
Well, he did. He did.
The span of the next year and a half.
Yeah, but for himself, he was able to line his pocketbook.
Oh,
he was
yeah,
able
yeah.
to, you
he
know,
had creative control over everything.
Creative control, and it did give it. It gave him a lot of leverage, and
it gave his career a kick in the pants.
It was a career renaissance for him. It absolutely was. It was a risk that paid off big time. It was a risk that might not have happened. He, you know, they had a contingency plan, and the
imagine, yeah, it was Sting.
Sting was the
Sting
contingency
was
plan.
Was the backup plan. That would have been fascinating.
That would have been really interesting
because you know at that point Sting had been a good guy since 1989.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
That would have been a massive turn as well.
Yeah, I think Hogan was sort of required. And yeah, I don't know. It makes you wonder. I really wonder where Hogan would have landed had he not joined the NWO, if it was Sting instead of Hogan. Something tells me he would have eventually, because he would have seen which way the wind was blowing. And the NWO was so cool, and Hogan wanted nothing more than to be cool and relevant. He would have eventually hopped on.
Yeah,
and probably fairly quickly.
Yeah,
as soon as he saw the cool like shirts, the cool NWO shirts, all brother,
and the cool vignettes they were shooting, all the black and white vignettes.
Oh, he would have been all about that.
And he heard the theme song. Yeah, he would have been all in on it.
As much as Nash probably would have been like, "Oh, really?" So, Hollywood Hogan. It was. I mean, that's one of the biggest repackagings of all time, but let's talk about the number one.
Number one.
The biggest repackage, the most consequential repackage in the history of professional wrestling. Oh, shit, Steve Austin. Where's his picture? There it is. Look
there
at
it
that.
Is.
What? Stone Cold Steve Austin from, of course, The Ringmaster.
Yeah.
Now, we all know in 1995, I believe, Steve Austin, who was a well-known name in WCW.
Oh, he achieved a good measure of success.
Tag team champion,
yeah,
I believe.
Champion.
U.S. champion.
Yeah, I think he was TV champion, too.
He was injured, let go by Eric Bischoff via FedEx, if I'm not mistaken. Goes over to ECW, cuts a bunch of blistering promos on WCW, on Eric Bischoff, on Hulk Hogan. Has a couple matches there before Vince calls him up and says, "Do you want to come work for me?
We'll call you the Ringmaster."
Yeah, they brought him in as the Ringmaster
in early 96.
And he had some like weird like green. I mean, it's weird now because of what we know he became. But, you know, they shaved him, gave him a crew cut, basically.
Yeah, it was really short hair.
Yeah.
He had green trunks, and he was given the million-dollar title by his manager, Ted DiBiase.
They kind of stripped him of personality, too. Like, if you take a look at his run in WCW, especially the stuff he was doing with Pillman.
Oh yeah.
His charisma was evident. Mm-hmm. It was so there, you know, it's a shame that it was overshadowed by these other big names they were bringing in, these nostalgia acts essentially, because he could have been obviously a foundational piece for WCW. Yes. If handled correctly and if pushed correctly. We found out later on, of course, that, you know, Vince was the guy to sort of, or Stone Cold himself, really, coming up with that persona.
He was tired of the Ringmaster name, and so he watched a documentary on this mafia hitman,
mm-hmm.
Who dubbed himself the Iceman.
Yeah.
And so I guess Austin pitched this idea of a character, his character, be based on this hitman to WWE, and they gave him the following names to adopt.
Yeah.
Otto von Ruthless.
Wow.
Ice Dagger. Fang McFrost.
Oh my gosh.
Chili McFreeze.
It's hard to believe any of those are real.
I know.
That's weird.
Obviously he didn't like any of those for good reason.
No.
And so I guess he was having tea with his wife,
which is amazing.
And his wife said to him something along the lines of, "You better drink that tea before it gets stone cold." That's it. That's your name.
My name is Stone Cold Steve Austin. Way to go, you dumb son of a bitch. You just made my name.
And so he shaved his head.
Yeah.
Grew out the goatee.
Mm-hmm.
Stone Cold was born.
Yeah.
Ditched the green trunks. Put on some black ones.
Yeah. Got dumped on his head by Owen Hart. History was made. Yeah. No, the Stone Cold persona obviously became the biggest draw in the history of the WWE. And to this day, he's still, you know, beloved by people and fans everywhere.
Yes.
So, that repackaging right there probably, I mean, look, WWF had plenty of huge talent, but nobody drew the way Stone Cold drew.
Nope.
And he was kind of, for that period there, that very crucial period, 97, 98, and 99, that thing that sort of held the WWE, he was the glue,
mm-hmm.
that marquee.
Well, we saw the power of the Stone Cold character after he turned heel.
Mm-hmm.
Ratings went in the toilet.
And even during his injury absence, when WrestleMania 2000 came upon us, and we were left with that crap Fatal 4-Way, which obviously mm-hmm. wouldn't have been the case had Stone Cold still been around and he hadn't been injured, you know, we would have gotten another Stone Cold main event. It'd been fantastic.
Yeah.
And so, he was the glue that kept that place together. And yeah, like you said, when he turned heel and it wasn't Stone Cold the way we knew him and loved him, you know, things went south very, very quickly. So that repackaging of the Ringmaster to Stone Cold Steve Austin, you know, arguably made the WWE what it is today. It's just a shame that they cannot learn from their successes in the past.
Oh, I know.
You want to spike ratings? Freaking have Roman Reigns turn heel.
Yep.
And that week when it happens, there'll be so much buzz about that. The next week they'll be up and you can get all sorts of great stories out of that.
Actually, I kind of worry that the Roman's already passed for that. They should have done that after WrestleMania 31.
If he did something so shockingly heel, I'm telling you, man, that's the way they should have gone. Seth versus Brock at SummerSlam.
Yeah.
Roman wins Money in the Bank.
Cashes in on Seth.
Cashes in a true heel fashion and holds that belt up. And from then on, he's freaking heel Roman Reigns.
That would be a good idea, but it doesn't look like they're going to do it.
Nope, it doesn't. I don't think they're going to do it. Anyways, that's it for Count Out. Thanks so much for tuning in. Be sure to check out the other video we got up today or the other audio podcast we have going up today.
Yeah.
Top 10 WWE superstars right now. Who need a good old-fashioned repackaging? Until next time, we'll talk to you guys later.
Bye.